You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up? We are back with another episode of the X-Man Podcast. I'm your host, Doc Coyle. Thanks for checking out the show. And I am reporting to you from the road. Yes, it's the first time I have been on tour in 2 years. Almost within the week, actually. Bad Wolf's last tour was with Megadeth and Five Finger Death Punch, and ended February 20th, 2020. And now we're about a week into March, into 2022, and it's going great. It's going absolutely great. Let's talk about this real quick. but anyway, there's, just to let you guys know, there's no guest today, and there was no show last week, so I was just so wrapped up with everything preparing for this tour in terms of rehearsing and just gear and moving things and just getting everything ready. It was quite a monumental undertaking. So I apologize for not having a show out last week, but here I am. I'm going to see if I can talk to some of the guys on the tour, maybe get one of the Papa Roach guys or Hollywood Undead fellas on the show. It would be nice. They are wonderful. But anyway, so as you might think, there was a lot of anticipation going into this tour, as it would be the first show and first tour with our brand new singer, Daniel D.L. Laskowitz. And yeah, man, I felt like there was just a lot of pressure on us to perform and to have things go well, because when you replace a singer, there's just a big question mark. And I think through the rehearsing and everything, like, basically we rehearsed a lot. We prepared a lot. We really put a lot of work into the show, and we upgraded all of our gear and our in-ear setup and our whole chain of how everything gets done. And we knew kind of almost from day one that end of things was going to be an advancement. But you know, I saw just rehearsing every day with DL, every day he got a little more confident, a little more comfortable. And so kind of by the time the show day happened, I knew it would be good, but I guess at that point it wasn't whether we're going to be good. It's like, is the crowd going to respond? I mean, I think there's this idea in your head of who you are as a band. We've gotten so much hate from people that were supposedly our fans. You know, you have to ask yourself the question, will they still be there? Because until you experience it, you just don't know. And I can say pretty much hands down, it was a great response. You know, you're looking in the crowd, people are singing along, they're loud. There was like a Bad Wolves chant before we went on stage. I mean, it was, and I guess for us, I guess it's as almost as close as a quote-unquote hometown show as we could get. So you just felt an extra amount of energy and anticipation, and we were all excited, and just whatever thing that was built up to kind of get to that point really expressed itself in that first show. And we have an incredible sound guy, Ross Landis, who kills it. And, you know, we got some new stage stuff with these cabinets with our logo on it, and we didn't run our backdrop that day, but what is on our backdrop, which is the wolf head from the new album, runs on a video screen. And with the lights in the House of Blues there, it just looked absolutely incredible. So just seeing the pictures and the videos and people posting things, it was pretty unbelievable, you know? And to some degree, it like kind of brought around this journey, man, that we've been through, and kind of in many ways, like me not knowing what the future is going to hold, you know, it's kind of this weird thing where in like business and in the idea of a entrepreneur, right? We live in like a fake it till you make it culture, right? Where the line is supposed to be like, if I'm going to do an interview and people ask me, oh man, so what's going to be like on tour, or how's the band doing? You know, you just, man, we're killing it. It's going to be the greatest. We're going to have a bigger number one single, right? Like the idea generally is to sell yourself. And sometimes you can kind of manifest those things into reality. And that's a really tough thing for me to do, because I'm just not a bullshitty type of person. I keep things very much, I try and keep them in reality while remaining positive. You know, I remember I was God forbid, was opening up for Lamb of God in the show. We were playing like Rhode Island somewhere. And I was talking to Chris Adler. I was like, oh man, what's the ticket sales looking like today? He's like, sold out. And the show was not sold out. It was like, I don't know, 200 people in a maybe 500 cap room. But it's like that mentality, right, is probably what helped catapult Lamb of God to where they got, because it's just this thing of like, oh no, we're winners and we're going to be winning. And even if the show is sold out, the story that the show is sold out is kind of meaningful. So it's, I don't know, I have a tough time kind of really embodying that mentality, because it does help if you just go out and you just tell people everything's great. They're like, oh, I guess everything's great. And by the way, things are great. So we played that first show, and you know, great crowd. And then the second show, we were in Phoenix, and it was kind of like a more dead crowd. We felt like we had to work a little more. Everyone wasn't as hyped up as the first show, and we're all like, you know, kind of like, you know, kind of lukewarm. And then, you know, end of the night, we did like double the merchandise in the second show we did the first show. And so things start kind of settling in, and you're like, okay, man, this is pretty badass. And then the third show, we got to play in Vegas with Volbeat, which is one of my favorite bands, and big crowd, great energy. And the Volbeat guys came in the room after the show and gave us some props and gave us some love. And that was really gratifying. Because, you know, you get kind of one opportunity, and they were closing up their tour with Ghost. So to kind of make an impression on them was something I really wanted to do, go out there and really have a great show. And we did. So it's interesting, you know, having not been on the road in 2 years, just kind of figuring out my routines and how to be productive and how to maximize this time, because, you know, there's COVID restrictions where we're not really supposed to be socializing and kind of being out and doing that thing. So it kind of some way forces you to focus your energies and how you kind of work your day. And so that's what I've been doing. I've been kind of really focusing on the social media stuff and getting content for that. And now, I mean, truth be told, it's like once we've done a few shows, and the last show we did in Utah, like, was the best one yet. And then we had to cancel Denver, or we postponed Denver for a couple of days, and then we canceled our show in South Dakota, and due to just weather stuff. But it's just a different feeling around the band. You know, I think, you know, to some degree, there's like a new kind of relearning everyone's rhythms and all that. You have a new member, and, you know, we all want to make sure DL's good. You know, he has a family, and we know how that can be tough. So, you know, it's this like process of like reestablishing the culture around the band, and when you're kind of excised of negative energy, you have to fill that with a different kind of energy. And the thing I kind of learned through this is like the way we got to this place, and that's whether that's finishing the album or doing the artwork or just working on anything, it's a collective endeavor of kind of like it's really tight, grueling work, but doing it every day, it just slowly takes form. And so that's how I'm kind of like understanding the touring end of things is like, man, it's like there is a lot of little work and little things that have to be done. But if you do them correctly and you're constantly working around the edges and trying to improve all these different things, then it will see results. So it's, you know, I have to say at this point, I think we've kind of crossed every test and passed with fairly high marks, being that the album and, you know, the album quality, song quality, and, you know, doing music videos, and now we're touring and working on social media side of things and trying to make a better connection with the fans. And so now all I see is potential, and a lot of big potential, because now I know as a live band, we're solid and even better than solid, actually, because the band has never sounded this good. And that's really exciting. That's really exciting when you just know you're kind of performing at that highest level and presenting a product to a paying audience that you can stand behind. And so I think a lot of questions have been answered in the last week. And I definitely have to give a lot of love to the Papa Roach guys and Hollywood Undead guys. I mean, those bands are very successful and they've been nothing but welcoming and gracious and supportive. And it's I can't explain to you how amazing it is to be on a tour with bands that are successful and there's no tension. There's no, ego person, someone, you know, storming through the halls or yelling people, you know, there's none of that on this tour. It's just really good energy. And I tell you, man, the one thing I've kind of gotten out of this is just appreciating the fact that all this stuff can just go away at any point. And so I'm just like really taking it in and going, man, this is a fucking cool job, man. It really is. I really love to play, and I really love playing with other people. And when it's really functioning on all cylinders, man, it's badass, man. It's been cool just seeing, like I said, seeing the fans, like some of these songs we've never played, and being able to experience that and actually see, no, there's a lot of fans of this band, and that's cool, man. It's really cool. 'Cause until you see it in person, I feel like it doesn't feel real, you know? So this feels like a first step in a very long journey. We're already talking about the next record. We're trying to plan the rest of the year with some other touring opportunities. And so it's just very, very, very exciting. So yeah, I think that's the update from the tour so far. So I'm going to talk a little more, but before that, we have a show sponsor. It's not a band, but it's my main man, Scott Bowling, with his YouTube show, Good Company. Check this out.
Hey guys, my name's Scott Bowling. I have a YouTube show called Good Company with Bowling.
What's up? This is Clint Lowry from 7Dust.
Hey, what's up? This is Sonny Mayo.
Hey, Ricky Rackman.
And you're watching Good Company with Scott Bowling.
I've interviewed bands like Limp Bizkit, Fozzy, 7Dust, Korn. I've had Chris Farley's brother, Tom Farley, on the show. My show is kind of like a modern-day Wayne's World. If you love a good interview, a good rock interview, or just any kind of interview, please, if you get a chance, check out my show, Good Company with Bowling.
So there you have it. If you want to check out Scott's show, just go on YouTube and search Good Company, and it's Scott Bowling with two T's, and the actual webpage is youtube.com/C/Scott Bowling. Good Company. Several guests that have been on this show have been on his show, whether it's Mark Rizzo from El Nino Soulfly, Jose Mangan, Rich Ward from Fozzy, and I'm forgetting the name of the band. Stuck Mojo. Good Lord. See, guys, not enough caffeine. And we're actually talking about myself going on there at some point, which would be a lot of fun. So go over there, check them out, tell them Doc Coyle sent you, and let them know that the X-Man moves the needle. If you'd like to sponsor the show, shoot me an email at thexmanpodcast@gmail.com. Remember, that is EX, or just send me a message on social media, and I'll probably just send you to the email address anyway. So one thing I wanted to talk about, and this, I talked a little bit about this at the intro for my last podcast, and it was talking about the situation in Ukraine, and this was, I was speaking about it before the war had officially started, and, you know, talking about my concerns and trying to kind of have some humility with the understanding of the way information passes and not jumping to too many conclusions. But, you know, we're, I won't say we, but they are, at, I guess, 10 days into that war or something like that. And I'm, you know, between you guys and myself, it's been really heartbreaking, you know, to kind of witness at whatever distance I am this occurrence. You know, I truly think this is the most potentially dangerous and destabilizing military action that has taken place probably in my lifetime. I mean, I guess with the exception of that kind of the double dose of Iraq and Afghanistan and kind of how that has, of course, affected the world and affected America itself. But there's something about a land war in Europe to this magnitude that feels, in my opinion, like the entire West itself is under attack. You know, I made some comparisons to World War II and the Germans kind of imperial spread and assault, and also similar made some comparisons to the 2003 Iraq War. Pretty sure the war started in 2003, and using that idea of preemptive strike. And, you know, and this is so much worse, you know, in my opinion. And I guess, you know, and I hope that doesn't sound callous, because, you know, that would kind of undermine the devastation that took place in Iraq. And I certainly wouldn't want to do that. But I think it's important not to kind of make these comparisons one-to-one, because it's very difficult to do that. All these situations have different histories and circumstances. And to me, it's interesting, you know, because I've, you know, as I said in another one, I follow the reactions to something like this, and I kind of get a feel for what's going on. And one of the guys I'm following is Russell Brand, who I kind of hate watch, because I think he's a, I don't know, there's something off with him. And kind of, actually, he kind of reminded me, as his mentality was similar to the Riddler in the new Batman movie. I don't know if you guys have seen that. This idea of kind of like accurately criticizing power and wealth, but the solution is kind of the destruction of that power and wealth, and then there's a lot of collateral damage with that, right? It's, I don't know, there's some kind of anarchistic, I don't know, like the need for revolution, right? It's this idea that you have to tear things down to their core to have them rebuild, which is scary and dangerous if you're on the other end of that. Anyway, I feel like I'm going off on a tangent. But one thing he said, you know, he has such a prescribed worldview, which is to see everything through the lens of COVID and culture war and saying, oh, well, it's a very complex situation. And to me, the situation in Ukraine and Russia is not very complex at all. It's fairly simple. It's a bigger country with a bigger military invading another one to take it over. That's it. That's what's happening. And it's like all these people who, you know, claim to be patriots. Something I'm like, you see, ever since we Red Dawn, this is like that. Who's the good guys and who's the bad guys of Red Dawn? Think about it. I don't know if you've ever seen Red Dawn. It's a film about, it's a dark, twisted fantasy about Russians invading like the Midwest or something, which is absolutely hilarious. Like if there was a land invasion in America, that's what they do. They go take over Idaho, which is absurd. But it's fairly simplistic in my measure. And the thing about this is we're not going to get too many just wars, meaning there's very few and far between where there's going to be conflicts that require military attention that are actually have a morally righteous component to it. And to me, this is one of them, and which is why it reminds me so similarly of World War II. And what people kind of don't get is that generally, the people are rarely for war unless they've been personally attacked. That's the way you kind of rally the populace, you know, and historically in our country, at least Congress needed to vote to go to war. That doesn't really exist anymore. But, you know, people often, you know, don't look at their history and the idea that no, Americans did not want to get into World War II, right? Despite the fact of what they may or may not have known about the genocide taking place, is that the truth is most people, and I'm not saying this is illogical or wrong per se, that, well, I'm not going to sacrifice myself for someone else's war. I think that's a survival mindset that is completely logical. But the thing that's interesting kind of post the war on terror, post Iraq, and that kind of the neoconservative mentality about, you know, this is what a lot of people don't really get. Like when they think about the old George H.W. Bush speech where he coined the phrase the New World Order, and they thought it was like, oh, it's like the Illuminati, it's a conspiracy. And it's like, no, it's actually not what he was saying. What he was saying is that once the Soviet Union fell, it created this kind of conglomerate that we refer to as the West, right? Which is, we're united by democratic values, free open societies, free trade, capitalism. And this idea that through that, we're actually, we are kind of on the same page and where we become interdependent with each other. And by enforcing those values globally, you would get less conflict because everyone would go, well, hey, I'm not going to get in a war with China because they might make the things that we buy, or so they wouldn't want to harm their own livelihood or sanctity because of that. That interdependence in this globalized, connected world is what's going to help with peace, you know. And to a big degree, that's the way things went. But where it went wrong was through that other end of the neoconservative mentality, is through that connectivity. And the United States in particular feeling the need to be the actor that needs to keep order, we become more militaristic and more imperialistic, and it creates this cycle of war and conflict, even when, and I think that rubs people the wrong way, even if the intentions are good, right? And so you can kind of look back to the first Iraq war, where Iraq invaded Kuwait. And I can look at that kind of, I feel like, to a very definitive degree and say, okay, those are the righteous types of wars where you want to be able to stop the bully from bullying other places, you know? And some people will say, well, America doesn't have standing to say that because of what it did in Iraq. And my view on that is, well, I didn't want to go to Iraq, so I can make whatever fucking argument I make, right? I'm consistent. And saying that, okay, well, they don't have standing, but I'm like, you do understand these, it's a different group of people in power now, right? Like, not everyone is necessarily, like, the you know, the administration in power in 1990 is not the one responsible for the Vietnam War. And the people in power now are not responsible for Iraq War, even though Joe Biden voted to go to Iraq. So I'm sure he does have some culpability on his hands for sure, even though he was very critical of George W. Bush's handling of that conflict. But it kind of puts in this mindset of, and I talked about this on the last one, is this circle of blame. We're so if I don't like Joe Biden, I don't like Democrats, I'm going to find a way to contort the situation to go, well, this is why it's his fault. And I find that to be a little bit ridiculous in this case, because obviously this is a conflict involving two countries that are not United States. People, well, it's his saber rattling is what caused it. I'm like, you know, that's pretty narcissistic to think that I don't even know what the saber rattling. They imposed sanctions to, you know, hopefully get them to stop going for more. That's the point of sanctions. And, you know, some people go, like, Trump is like, well, if I was in office, this wouldn't have happened.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, this is Chris Swinney, formerly of the Ataris and currently host of That One Time on Tour, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Have you ever wondered what it's really like on the road? The highs can be euphoric, but the lows can be crushing. Join me every week as I chat with industry pros about what it's like living out their wildest dream and, in some cases, their worst nightmare. Past guests of the show include members of NoFX, Pennywise, Bad Religion, and more. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
And that is very, very interesting statement because why? So are we saying that Putin wouldn't have invaded because he is scared of what Trump would do? And so then if that's the case, it's like, well, so then what is the criticism against Joe Biden? Because I've heard, well, the problem is he's too weak. So you're saying we should go to war. We should put troops in. And then they'll say, no, we don't want to do that. Well, I'm like, then what are you saying? Like, there's no actual logic here. It's just about kind of pinning someone you don't like into contorting the facts in a way that you can go, well, they're doing it wrong. And I think this is a situation where they've actually done it probably about as right as you can without actually putting troops on the ground or giving them air support, you know? And, you know, because of that idea of, well, Putin is going, you know, he's going to start a nuclear war. And I still find that very, very hard to believe. But that's like kind of like the one mistake you can't get wrong, right? Is it even worth calling the bluff, right? Because what it would indicate is that he is gone. He's mentally ill. He is willing to forego the existence of Russia altogether as a functional society to just prove his point. And what you're kind of seeing, and this is the, you know, some of these excuses, and they go, oh, well, the problem is NATO overreach. And I'm like, okay, but the reason why they want to be in NATO was to prevent this exact thing. And that's the reason why he doesn't want them in NATO, so that he could do this, you know? And the truth is, from a geopolitical standpoint, and where Ukraine is affixed, essentially, if he loses the Ukraine, then Russia's place as a world player becomes infinitely diminished. So that's why it's being positioned as a kind of endgame scenario, where he either needs to have enough influence where he goes, well, they're neutral, which he claims to want, but I don't think that's the truth. I think he actually wants a Russia-friendly government, and that's his plan. His plan right now, more than likely, is to not even take over Ukraine. Oh, it's Russia. His plan is to get in there, have the war do its effects, get Zelensky out of there, whether they kill him or whatever, implement a Russian stooge government, and then they could do all the shit he wants them to do and essentially be a Russian state, if it's not even that, under name only. You know, this is what he did when he had those two areas added, or they're independent nations. I forget the names of them, Donbass and the other one. So, and this, and the reason why I'm talking about this, and this is what, like, I don't get, like, you get these people who are, you know, the fucking Russell Brands and people like this, the Tim Pools and Dave Rubens, who care so much about some truckers in Canada, right? Or someone who got tackled in Australia, right? They care so much about that. But then this, when people are dying by the, you know, by the hundreds and thousands, oh, that's not your business. I mean, that the level of hypocrisy there is just out of control, because this, the truth is, like, I'm sorry, a bunch of truckers causing a problem for some fucking mandates that are probably going to, like, evaporate within the next 6 months. Like, it's not even going to be an issue. You know, this will affect everything. You see how, you know, because we are so interconnected with energy and supply chains and all this stuff in our economies, you know, this situation will impact everything. You know, I'm an international touring artist, you know, that will affect where we can play, what countries we can go to. This could reestablish the global order. This is extremely scary. And at the worst case scenario, it could literally mean the end of the world as we know it. So I don't really see how any story is more important than this, or why you shouldn't care. You want to bury your head in the sand. You know, and ultimately, the way I view it is, when you have people like this, reckless, violent bullies, you have to punch them in the fucking nose, because they won't stop. Because the only thing they recognize is strength. You know? And if they can take this, what's to stop them from taking the next place? Just because they can. Because they know, oh, we got nukes, so don't do it. You know? It really fucking infuriates me. You know, and I want to give a shout out to Ginger, Ukrainian band, who put their whole career on hiatus so that they could focus on this effort to support their country. And I bought a t-shirt. You should check out their socials and see how you can support. I mean, there's definitely other ways I want to try and support this cause. But I don't think I've seen a more righteous cause in a very long time. Perhaps in my lifetime, and I totally understand the criticism around maybe people like myself in the West who prioritize a country that we feel is more quote unquote European, and where are we when there's atrocities happening in Syria and Yemen, in North Africa, and all these different places, and why we feel so invested. And I get that criticism, and I get the criticism around the idea of the U.S. being the world police, and going, well, you can't solve every problem. We don't have the resources. We don't have the will. But I am also of the mind, you want to stem small problems when they're still small, and you go, well, because it's like, oh, well, you want to fix that faucet? It's a leak. It's dripping. And stop the leak before it becomes a flood. That's the way I look at things. And I'm just one person. Obviously, I'm not in control of any ability to truly affect this this effort. But it's hard to feel this helpless when you have something like this going on. So I feel for the Ukrainian people. And you know what? I feel for the Russian people too, because they're not being given an accurate representation of what's going on. I knew if they knew the truth of it, they wouldn't want any part of it. And ultimately, I think they're the ones that have the most power to affect this from within, but they need the information to be able to do that. But my heart goes out to the entire country of Ukraine. You shouldn't have to be dealing with this bullshit. I thought we were over this stuff, but unfortunately our power structures are still dominated by small men with fucking pitiful egos, and they're filled with pride that yearns for glory. And it fucking infuriates me. So I wish there was more I could do, because everything feels so symbolic and, hashtag activism, which, it's there to make you look good to your friends, but does it really help the scenario you're kind of looking at? So I don't know. I've said this a million times. I'm not an activist, but there hasn't been an issue or something going on that I felt was this important. And I'll say that with whether it's the Black Lives Matter thing. You guys heard me say on here, I was, I had a lot of differing thoughts on that, or any of the litany of issues, whether it's, Occupy Wall Street, or, a lot of people now, their issues are, hey, I'm against the mandates, or that's their issue, whatever your issue is. But this is something that the first time since the Iraq War and Afghanistan War that I've felt this passionately about something, because to me, it's not about peace as, some bumper sticker that kind of is not meaningful within, how the world works. I always said I was probably a pacifist as a young person, and I've evolved on that as I've gotten older, because I understand pacifism is only useful at certain times, but it does not work when you're trying to be dominated and eradicated, and sometimes you got to stop the bully because no one else is going to stop him. So anyway, I don't know if I brought any wisdom or anything, but it was just kind of going through how I felt about that situation and how I feel about it. So with that said, I'm going to get out of here. Thank you for listening. And I'm going to try and get some more interviews done on this tour. Obviously the playing and performing takes precedent. But now that I'm settled in, I think it'll be easier to kind of knock some of this out, and there will be a lot of downtime. So should be fairly easy, but you guys have an excellent week. Stay safe and keep it positive. Keep the love popping. Stay close to the people that you care about. and say your prayers and eat your vitamins. Mamba's out.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King in Off-Road Minivan, Every week, I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.